Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Sitting across from me,
Gary LeMaster,
who's here a lot. I don't know who the guy is, but he's here a lot.
They can't keep me out. They keep locking the door, but I'm pretty good at picking it.
And then we have a guest today who has never been on the show. And Klaus, would you introduce yourself? Tell people a little bit about yourself, how you ended up in America. I mean, you came over from Germany for a visit, and then you never went home and became a citizen.
No, that's not exactly how it was. My name is Klaus von Stodderheim. I was an exchange student in a prep school in Cambridge, Massachusetts. When I was 18, fell in love with America, went back home, and as soon as I turned 21, went to the consulate in Berlin and said I wanted to emigrate, and they said, fine, fill out the forms. That was the last 6 months of the old quota system, so luckily I didn't procrastinate. And I lived in New York for almost 50 years and retired 4 years ago, and splitting my time between Montana and Arizona, where it's nice and warm in the winter.
So you come down here in the summer and you spend the winters in Montana?
No, it's the other way around.
All right. Well, what happened? A lot of my thinking and part of what we've talked about on the last show was that the country is almost completely divided.
And in fact, we're talking about the election.
Talking about the election. The country is almost completely divided in terms of the population into two large tribes. And you can see that in this election where both candidates got about 60 million votes apiece. And what, Gary, 49 or 50 million people didn't vote at all?
Theoretically, the turnout was abysmal.
Okay, so we have these two tribes. And so the problem we had been thinking about, or at least I had been thinking about, what happens when Hillary Clinton wins and we have all these furiously angry conservatives and who have lost, but not lost by much. And actually the opposite, of course, happened is in the Hillary Clinton has apparently won the popular vote, and it's getting larger and larger. Projections from the New York Times analysts are that it'll reach about 170 million votes.
No, they'll reach about 1.7 to 1.8 million votes. Currently, the margin is currently at 680,000 votes as of this morning.
So now within a period of 25 years, we've had a Democrat winning the popular vote and losing to a Republican that's won the electoral vote. And so that's a series of concerns. But the point of that I was trying to make is something a little different, which is that these two tribes are almost equal size and equal strength. But what's happened in this election is that one of them has got sort of everything.
It's the rise of the bullies.
Yeah. I mean, they've got the White House, they have the Senate, and they have the House of Representatives and most of the governorship.
And they're going to have the Supreme Court.
And they'll have the Supreme Court. So if you're a liberal, if you're a Democrat, if you're
and,
a progressive,
and they have the media,
then you're in a spot. So two tribes battling it out for different values, different ideas. Now, I'm not saying that the tribes are like completely self-contained, because there's fuzzy edges on both tribes. I mean, some Democrats vote for Republicans here and there, some so forth and so on. Their cultural value. The other thing that's happened in this election was that what's powering the United States economy now are the cities: San Francisco, San Jose, Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, Boston. These are the powerhouses of all our industrial and scientific change. So the cities are entirely blue. They vote Democratic. And they're where a lot of the money is. I mean, you can go from northern Arizona, as I did, visit New York, where I lived for a long time, like Klaus did, and the wealth of the people, the success of the people, the number of kinds of jobs that young people can get is astonishingly different. So it's hard to know how all of this is going to play out, because a lot of the economic power, instead of being in the hands of Republicans as is traditional, is actually in the hands of Democrats living in the large, powerful cities. And we're seeing, you know, threats from California and Oregon and Washington to secede. I don't think that's going to happen. What do you think, Gary?
Well, we've seen threats of the old South, of southern states like Texas, to secede. So I kind of am amused that it's on both sides.
Go ahead.
I think that when you're talking about the cities, you know, the urban versus rural, you know, I've lived in both. And I think that the biggest difference, probably above all, is diversity. There are lots of poor people living in big cities. Really poor. There's some very, very wealthy people. There's poverty in the rural areas, and there's wealthy people in the rural areas. They don't understand each other very much. Unless you lived in both, you really don't have a grasp.
They're culturally quite different. I mean, I'm from a small town in Oklahoma, lived a long time in New York and also in California, now here in Arizona. In the Oklahoma of today, rural Oklahoma of today, if I was in my hometown of Claremore, I think it probably went solidly for Trump. I think you would find Democratic voters a little bit overwhelmed and intimidated. If you went to New York City, when I lived on the Upper West Side, and I think I want to make a point here, when I lived on the Upper West Side, there was almost nobody to vote for because Democrats always won everything.
Well, the real election was the primary, right? I mean, that was curiously and viciously fought.
Yes, but that was it. Once the primary was over, there was, you know, I voted every election, but my choices and people who won were all Democrat. The point, I think two things have happened. One, I think Gary wants to talk about gerrymandering, which has helped this happen. The other thing is I think the first book was in about 2004 called The Big Sort. And what it is that people are sorting themselves out according to their politics more than ever before in U.S. history. And so the Democratic cities are becoming more and more Democratic. When I lived in New York, the Upper East Side was where all the business, the people who owned New York lived on the Upper East Side, and the people who, like, delivered the mail and stuff lived on the West Side. That's changed in that there's this concentration of people into small districts. And so in the House of Representatives, all the Democrats are in fairly small but heavily populated districts where the Democrat wins by a huge margin. And so that you have a popular vote, like, and I haven't checked it this time, but do you remember what it was for Pennsylvania where, you know, the Democrats got 51% of the vote and ended up with, you know, 36% of the seats? And
yeah, I don't remember the actual numbers.
So
I think what one factor that we have to play in, you know, to figure into the so-called big sort is the role of the media, especially social media. I've been all over social media since the election, more so than ever before. And what I found is that you have this huge number of full websites, full news sites.
So I'm talking about geographical sort. You're
right.
Talking about intellectual sort.
It's happening on every level. You have a higher degree of segregation, racial segregation in the U.S. now than you did when the Voting Rights Act was passed. And that's happening in both Democratic and Republican areas. You have this huge intellectual sort where people, you know, on Facebook, one of the things that Trump actually benefited from and encouraged was websites or full news sites that posted stories on Facebook and on Twitter and elsewhere that were complete, outright frauds, lies, that were totally from the right wing.
There's a fraud machine out there. Right.
Right. Then you also have some of that going on the left. It's about 2-1 Republican or right versus left.
Most of the stuff I've seen on the left and complained about has been exaggerated headlines, big headlines. And when you go there, there's either no story or minimal story. It's not an outright manufactured lie. You hear outright manufactured lies. I heard one recently that Clinton had JFK Jr. assassinated when she wanted to run for the Senate. I heard that George Soros owned all the ballot boxes and voting machines in the United States.
It's just
complete lies.
There's a story this morning that George Soros is hiring protesters to hit the streets to protest against Trump. That's on one of the Russian sites. I just want to finish real briefly. Is that studies have shown there's about 2 or 3 to 1 of faux news sites, Republican or conservative versus liberal, and then the same study showed that those sites, the conservative sites, told lies at about double the rate of the left. So what you have is this increasing separation of people in the U.S. that are getting their news. You know, 60% of respondents said they get most of their news from social media. So you have this huge divide happening based on lies and fabrications and very, very partisan stories.
Yeah, go ahead, Klaus, because you're coming from how long you've lived in the United States? A very, very long time now. But you've come from a different angle than I think that we do.
No, I don't. I'm not sure that that's true. At least I can't think of in what respect. I mean, I've spent all my adult life here. What I was about to say is that something extraordinary has happened to the truth just very recently within the last few years through social media. At one point, the truth was pretty much discernible if you read the major newspapers, and that was how people got their news. But now, as you said, people get their news from social media, and there's no distinction. The news from the New York Times looks as relevant and accurate as the news from some faux web, typically right-wing website. So the truth, for many people, is whatever happens in their particular bubble. It's a real challenge. How do you inform voters when there are 2 or 3 or more different versions of the truth? We think we know what the truth is, and I think we're right. We read the New York Times and the Washington Post. But there's a whole bunch of people there who've been told that they should distrust those and trust sites that just make things up. And it's a... I don't know what the answer
is. According to one recent study in BuzzFeed, the media that are the most truthful are the mainstream media, like the New York Times and the Washington Post. When you get way over to the left or way over to the right, not so much. But what can we do about it? Because if people are only listening to people who agree with them, what can be done? How are things ever going to change?
One of the things I'd point out along this line is I saw David Frum, the Republican strategist, on a recent news show, and he was very much against Donald Trump, longtime Republican, part of the establishment, but he was voting for Hillary, and he pointed when asked about it, he pointed to the breakdown, the general breakdown of U.S. institutions, the very things that have made this country different and better than other countries, that people
give
have...
Give me an example,
Well, he in particular, he pointed to the media. We used to, the media was always called the fifth estate, right? It was the one of the pillars of democracy that that we relied on, and the mainstream media. Well, the Republicans over a period of time since Agnew and Nixon have so discredited mainstream media that now it's not believed by either side. And then he also pointed to Congress that people no longer trust Congress. And oddly enough, they were furious at Congress over the last few years, But they, you know, what did they do? They voted for a Republican Congress again, the very Congress that was there. So, and then he got to the Supreme Court, where both sides are very upset with decisions made by the court. And so both sides kind of discredit the court, and the court has become increasingly partisan.
It seems to vote in a partisan way, mostly. There's one swing vote, right? And otherwise, it seems partisan. So what I hear you saying is that the polarization has become more and more intense, and it's shattering or undercutting a lot of institutions that have been around for
Yes,
ever.
It's if you don't have our institutions and faith in our institutions, in our Congress, in our president, in our Supreme Court, and in our other courts, in our media, our national public square. If you don't have faith in any of those institutions, or not in all of those institutions, then we really don't have a government.
If you believe in a conspiracy theory, there's not much to say. So somebody says to me, George Soros owns all the voting machines in the country. I can go on PolitiFact and find out it's utterly untrue. He doesn't own anything. It's false from day one to day 101. But if I tell the individual that that's true, he's just not going to trust it because it comes from the mainstream media, because it goes against his conspiracy theory. And a conspiracy theory is kind of like you're drawn into the depths. So any kind of information that contradicts your conspiracy is not true. And so there's no way to interact. And some people are so far in the bubble, and I think there's some people on the left, but I don't see it as much, that I don't think that information, facts, like we consider facts to be sort of an objective truth, I don't think they matter. What do you think, Klaus? Do they matter to people, or do they not see that there's a problem?
I think increasingly people live in their respective bubbles, because if you're conservative and you're on Facebook, you're going to see conservative stuff, and it's only going to emphasize what you already believe in. The same is true on our side. Now, we like to believe, and I think we're right, that we're being more objective, and the media we consume is more objective. But you can't tell that to somebody on the other side because they refuse to believe it. I wanted to draw one parallel, and I have to be careful about this. Trump is certainly not Hitler and won't be Hitler, and U.S. institutions would make that impossible. But there are some eerie similarities in the fact that, as Goebbels said, if you tell the big lie often enough, people will believe it. And unfortunately, that is happening here. And another part of the rise of the Nazis was this was the conspiracy theory that the world, and particularly the Jews, were conspiring against the German people. And those conspiracy theories are very dangerous because they make scapegoats out of all the people you've been told you're not supposed to like, and for people on the right already don't like, but now it's legitimate. So, as I said, some eerie parallels. It won't be as bad, but it's certainly scary, especially for somebody who grew up where I grew up.
I think it's really critical. This is not going to change until we change our media. Mark Zuckerberg, who created Facebook, recently denied that Facebook had any part in what happened in the election, that it's not untruthful. Yet privately, when he was emailed by people, including my wife, he responded by saying that he's going to make a very large effort to clean it up. A lot of the faux news sites that are on Facebook, if you track them back, are Russian. And a lot of them, at least on the conservative side, and a lot of the people posting on various shares are people that are paid by the Russian government to be trolls and to try to change opinion in the U.S.
This is well documented in Europe. The Russians have been doing it to try to influence European elections for quite a long time. They had an easier time getting into European. One theory is that if you tell enough lies and cause enough confusion, you can sort of weaken your opponents without ever actually even winning a discussion. You know, there's enough chaff in the air that you can't really see what's going on through the lies. And that people talk about the Russians hacking into computers and releasing segments of information. But one article said basically the Russians don't even have to do that. They can just plant enough false news stories to confuse everybody. Because the problem we have, and we've talked about this for years, is when someone says something totally false in one sentence, it takes 10 sentences to undo it.
It's very hard to disprove a negative. I think when I was debating with in some cases former friends during the run up to the election, they were citing as factual news sources, websites that ended with a .ru, and on many cases, and had no. When I said that those were from Russia, they absolutely denied it. I also want to point out that before I forget it, to point out the role that capitalism plays in this, in that
we're all capitalists here,
for one thing, the chairman and CEO of CBS, basically came out early on and said we're going to cover Trump as much as we can because he's going to make us a lot of money because he's good for ratings. But I would also point out, Glenn Beck is a great example. You know, people on the left thought Glenn Beck, when he was on Fox News and had his, has his radio show, was a complete lunatic. And yet, during the run up to the election, he completely turned. He came out for Hillary. He came out for solid policies. And I've always thought and always suspected that the only reason he was doing what he was doing was it was good for business.
Right.
His ratings were high. Yeah.
And now he's switching sides, or he's sounding different because he decided before Trump won the election.
Controversy.
That's where he could revive his sources, because his economic situation has gone downhill. The moment that people listen to him has gone downhill. He played the weirdest. You ever watched the man?
Oh, yes.
That was the weirdest stuff I ever saw.
Controversy is good for ratings.
For normal conservatives rather than conspiracy crazy guys.
Alex Jones is one of the worst.
He's the worst, I think, that I know of. So, Klaus, you do see a parallel with things happening that happened in Germany. It's not a hard parallel. It's not complete. But there are resonances to it that are kind of disturbing. How about the rise of Mussolini? And it's a similar sort of situation. And we also have a real vicious guy in the Philippines. We have the situation in Turkey. We have a rise of anti-immigrant. And when they did the poll of why people voted for Trump, you'll hear Democrats talking, well, we didn't talk to the working class. But what people said was they voted for him based on immigration and terrorism. And we have in Europe a spreading thing. Poland has a right-wing anti-immigrant government. So does Hungary. The French National Front is getting stronger and stronger. And I'm not sure what's happening in Germany, because Merkel took a stand to help refugees. Seems to me that she's, wherever her conservativeness in her politics, she did the right thing, and now she's apparently in all kinds of terrible trouble. And that's not even the U.S. It's in Germany.
Well, we'll have to see what happens. Certainly, there is a, I don't even know whether you would call it exactly right wing, but there certainly is a much more conservative element that is in opposition to refugees, and it's getting strength. And we'll have to see what happens in the next elections. Certainly Merkel is not, at one point, she was pure lily white and admired by all, and that's certainly changed in the last couple of years. I admire her for her stand on refugees. I mean, I'm an immigrant. I'm very, very sympathetic to refugees, but she did bite off a huge piece, and maybe in retrospect, the bigger piece than was wise to chew.
I guess it wasn't planned well. She made a very generous statement inviting refugees, and there wasn't really sufficient support to deal with the issues that naturally arise.
And I'd point out one of the reasons behind the embrace of immigrants in Germany and much of Europe is because of their aging population and declining population. That is, they're going to need more people to work and pay taxes in order to support
another institutions. Theory might be that Klaus left Germany and came to the U.S.
Well, that may be exaggerating ever so slightly. I think what happened in Germany with refugees, I mean, a cynical argument would be the demographic argument, right? The population pyramid, you know, is going in the wrong direction. But I think, you know, a lot of the initial sympathy and enthusiasm for refugees, also by the German population, is our history, right? There's part of a history that we're all terribly and deeply ashamed of, and there was an opportunity for us to show that we're a different country from where we were two generations ago.
I wish that was true in the U.S. when it comes to our genocide of Native Americans and to our slavery. We've never come to grips with it in the same way that Germany has with its past.
Well, Germany lost the war. I mean, it was kind of forced upon them, but everybody agreed. I mean, there's complete consensus among the population that it was horrible, that it must never happen again, and Germans have shown them, you know, their best side from here on.
So we have in Trump the most lying, deceptive, dishonest candidate in my memory. I have to go back to Richard Nixon to see somebody with a kind of personal issues as strong as Trump. And Nixon was a policy wonk and wanted to be president for a long time and actually studied stuff.
And Trump is the opposite.
Well, and what
he
I
gets his news from social media.
And what I saw of Trump in New York is he's somebody who appoints somebody or hires somebody to do everything for him. I mean, Trump Tower is not built by Trump. He hires an architect. The guy, if he doesn't like the design, he criticizes it. He doesn't really, he delegates everything because he's extraordinarily lazy. That the darker side of American politics rose is not really that much surprising because it's always been there. And I think you were talking about, Gary, is we've never acknowledged not only slavery, but the whole history of discrimination. I was reading that Oregon was founded, when it was founded as a state, that banned black people from living in Oregon and made it illegal for them to move to Oregon. So there's a dark undercurrent to American politics that none of us wants to really go to because we like our country. And
this is being shown right now with the racial incidents that are happening with greater frequency across the U.S., even in grade schools, where bullying is suddenly okay because the guy elected to the highest office in the world is a bully. You know, the voters that voted for Trump, and I won't say that Trump won the election, he lost the popular vote. But there was so much anger out there based on race, based on immigration, based on gay marriage, based on the failure to prosecute the leaders of Wall Street.
Terrorism really scared people. The incident in San Bernardino. Now, the United States has been pretty damn good at keeping terrorists at bay. We really haven't had the organized attacks. What we've had is local people going bad and attacking people. But
we kill more people with guns in this country in about 3 weeks than have been killed by terrorists.
I know the odds of getting killed by a terrorist are, what, 100 million to one. There isn't any chance. But fear runs before fact. Fear runs before fact.
Especially if you don't have truthful media.
That's true.
I think that, you know, maybe more so than anything, you know, all of these fears, yes. But I think what prompted people to look in that direction is economic insecurity. I think that's at the bottom of practically and maybe all elections, that if the electorate or a sufficiently large amount of the electorate feels economically insecure, even if they have jobs, they will choose the other party. And there is a lot of economic anxiety in America. I mean, we all know it. The good jobs, you know, the old union-type jobs are disappearing, have largely disappeared. And although people may have jobs, they pay less than they used to. Many people who have jobs are afraid that they'll lose them, and then there's a large population that has stopped looking for jobs because they can't find them. And then a guy comes and says, I'm going to fix all this. And again, you know, as I said, eerily reminiscent. And I think that more so than any other thing was the driving force behind this election.
I think that's a good point. I think what's really puzzling about it, if you study all of the issues, is that, you know, where Trump made a big point out of the jobs being, you know, exported out of country, it turns out that's really not very true. We've done a show on artificial intelligence and the impact of technology. Technology with robotics and you know, car manufacturing and elsewhere has cut the number of people needed to build cars, for example, by, you know, 90%.
The example is a factory that once employed 500 people goes over to China, and then they decided to come back to the U.S., completely automate their plant. We're talking about a Nike plant in the South, and have 50 people.
Right.
So that even when the factories come back, and this is something that Gary and Bill Timmerman will address, I think, on December 4th in a couple of weeks or so. We're going to do another show on artificial intelligence because I know it seems an arcane or weird subject for a popular radio show, but I think that the impact of artificial intelligence, automation, if you want to call it that, is going to be very impactful over the next 20 years, whoever is president of the United States. We'll do a show on that.
The problem is, I mean, it's a political and an economic issue because we didn't hear anything about that in the run-up to this election. We heard very little about policy in any regard, even in the debates. But
that was the big shame, was that, I mean, Hillary had all these elaborate policy positions and stuff, and there was almost, and I think we'd all three agree, there was almost no discussion of policy in the debate. And we look at somebody like Trump on his foreign policy, we have no idea what it is, because he just seemed to say things that would get him votes. And so he said one thing one time, one thing another time. We don't know what's going to happen.
Getting back to the economic issue, it's there's so many things that haven't been addressed. The hollowing out of Main Street by big box stores like Walmart, you know, where a lot of these small, you know, independently run stores were put out of business in small towns across America.
I saw it in my hometown of Claremore. I mean, they put in a Walmart and the entire downtown of Claremore collapsed. It wasn't just the little locally owned hardware store. That's where it started. Now, first it took out the hardware store, and then it began taking out the whole downtown. So the downtown of my hometown now sells antiques, you know.
Go ahead, Klaus.
I want to go back to robotics, because my thought is that this may be the most serious economic and employment challenge we face. And no politician is talking about it because they don't know what to say about it, because They don't have the answer. Nobody knows the answer. But you can easily make up a scenario where, because a factory is going from 500 to 50, that in 20 years you'll have 40% unemployment, or we're going to have to completely change the way we do things. And I don't know what the answer is. Maybe people work only 20 hours.
People started talking in the 1960s, and I would read these really advanced thinker guys. I think one of the guys' name was David Lee or something like that. And they, you know, the theory back in the 60s was the way to deal with the automation that they saw coming was to shorten the work week. You know, 40 hours of pay for 30 hours of work, and spread the jobs around. That didn't develop because the service industry expanded and because of computers and stuff. So we really don't know what's going to happen.
The money went to shareholders. The savings went to shareholders.
But I think when we look at it, folks, when we look at it, if they're self-driving cars, they'll soon be self-driving buses and airplanes
and trucks.
And trucks, and there'll be operations by machine.
By best estimates, that's about 10 million jobs in the U.S.
Most of the legal profession can be replaced by computer programs.
Or the financial industry, my employer.
Already has been replaced, right? It's all computer programs now that generate stuff.
And you have to look at the impact of other technologies. I recently had my windshield replaced, the people doing it, told me that they were very soon, in a few years, going to be probably put out of business because they're coming with newer, lighter, stronger windshields that are almost impossible to chip or to crack or to break. And so they will come from the factory, and you will rarely, if ever, replace them. So that's jobs lost, too.
The evidence, as Gary says, I mean, the evidence is all around us, no matter where we look. And one of the biggest challenge in the next 20 years is what kind of adjustments do we make? Because if something doesn't change drastically in the way people are worked and employed, we're going to have a huge number of unemployed people, and that's political dynamite.
I think it's important to say stop blaming immigrants, stop blaming poor people for this. This is problems caused by our entire society, by technology, it's an invention. We have to find other ways to deal with it.
I think this is something that Gary and Bill Timmerman have addressed really well. We've had two or three shows. We're going to have more shows. I think it's an issue we have to bring before people. I know we're a little radio program in northern Arizona, but no one is talking about the impact of these things. And I would say that most of Trump's promises are false. The unemployment is dropping to lower than 5%. The manufacturing's picked up. The last couple of months before the election were really very good. But it didn't have enough time to really hit people. But I think long-term there is going to be, as Klaus and Gary are saying, there's going to be displacements. There are going to be far more people than there are needed jobs. And that's true even if you expand the service sector. We probably should get back to the election in the last 10 minutes or so.
I just wanted to make sure we didn't forget some other issues that contributed to this.
So we don't talk issues. We're secret Republicans here.
I think you have to look at the GOP tactics, especially as it pertains to, we already mentioned, gerrymandering and Republican-controlled states that make it virtually impossible to elect a Democrat in many of those areas and diffuse the vote.
Let's talk about that, Gary, the fact that the Senate, because here's how, and it's not some conspiracy, it's structural. The Senate has two senators from each state, and the small population western states far outnumber the small population blue state. So there's a bias against Democrats in that structure. There's a bias with the big sort and with gerrymandering in the House. And there's a bias in the presidency. It's not an accident that the Democrat has won the popular vote twice now in the last 25 years, and a Republican gets elected. It's something wrong.
Someone did a study on the value of your vote, depending on who you were and where you lived. And a Republican in Wyoming's vote is worth four times what a Democrat vote in California is. The Electoral College has to go. It had nothing to do with sorting out and leveling the playing field.
It was support Southern slavery, right? To protect Southern states.
The
Senate is overwhelmed by populist Northern states.
The Senate was designed to prevent tyranny by the majority. The Electoral College was never, designed for that, and it's archaic and it needs to go.
So what we have is a situation where, when the voters vote, Democrats win in the presidency by just a slight number. There's almost equal numbers on either side, and the Republicans are ending up with all the power. This is a prescription for a lot of conflict. The same way. And I don't know how this plays out, because it's something we haven't seen, is that all the economic progress is going on in Democratic-controlled cities and states. The Republican-controlled states are often not doing nearly as well. So there's that kind of a conflict. There's also the fact that Trump's character, his extreme politics, are going to force Democrats into a much more intense opposition. Vosh, you want to give us a few thoughts on how does this look from coming from somewhere else? Even though you've lived here all your life, you mentioned a sort of semi-parallel with what happened in Germany that disturbed you.
It's ironic, right? Because America, let's use Germany as an example, since I know it so well. We lost the war, and the Americans forced us to adopt a democratic system that turns out to be extremely democratic and has worked well and is enthusiastically supported by the entire population. And then you go to the United States, and it calls itself a democracy, but it's really a weird democracy, right?
The president is the only office that isn't democratically elected because of the Electoral College.
Well, the Senate isn't all that democratic either, right? Because
structure. Because, what is the population of California? 55 million. Population of Wyoming is 400,000.
Yeah, exactly. And then, the Senate isn't really democratic, doesn't reflect the population. The president, we have this bizarre thing, the Electoral College, that nobody in the rest of the world understands and that most Americans have a hard time understanding. And then we have a House that's gerrymandered. So, there's a democracy in America, but it's not really the kind of democracy that America has successfully promoted around the globe.
Okay, Gary, I wanted to ask you a question. We're called Democratic Perspective. We've got 3 minutes, and I want to ask you both, and I'm not going to say anything. Just you can wrap up the show, Gary. I think there's a door meeting. But what do you think Democrats should do? Let's go with Klaus first, and then we'll go to you, Gary. You can kind of finish things off.
Yeah, I wish you'd asked me that question at the beginning. I would have had time to think about it. I don't know the answer. I think the Republicans have had a 20-year strategy to dominate the state houses, and we've only, our horizon is 2 years. I think we need to do the same thing. We have to sit back, rethink, think about how we talk to all of the disaffected voters that we've lost, that we used to practically own, and think about a very long-term strategy that extends over a couple of decades. But exactly how that will work, I don't know yet.
Gary?
It's a really long answer, so I'll give you
You have 1 minute and a half.
I'll give you a very short.
You have 1 minute.
The Democrats, and the short answer is, Democrats have to make it very clear what we stand for. And I don't think that the party has done a good job of that. I don't think there's been adequate leadership from the top. I think there's been a lot of hangers-oners that make a lot of money off of the party without really contributing at the very top of the leadership. I'd like to get into a plug for our door. This coming Thursday, November 17th, there'll be an election wrap-up at the Old Sedona Bar and Grill at 8 a.m. Costs, I think, $11 to join.
So. Sheila Healy, who is the executive director of the Democratic Party, and Tom O'Halloran,
it's
will
12
be
bucks,
speaking,
by the way.
Who won our seat in Congress. We had Tom on a couple of weeks ago.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catches every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.